I think one of the least favorite moments for probably all of us as human beings is when we have to say that we're sorry. And not just because it humbles us, though it does that if we do it well, but also because there is a risk that's being taken. And a lot of times it's a measured risk, but there is this voice that nags us in the back of our mind. Will it be accepted? What if it's not enough? What if this is the end? What if I'm defined by this mistake? So it's understandable how daunting that reality is, and a lot of times how much we back away. We can at times seek to make excuses, to not own what we have done. We can couch our apologies with euphemisms and downplaying the damage that might have happened. And most of that is just to protect ourselves. So the Feast of the Divine Mercy is an opportunity for us to shed some of that less than perfect behavior that goes along with saying that we're sorry, but also that goes along with the way that we live, because divine mercy is not just about those moments where we realize that we are in need of forgiveness from the Lord, but divine mercy is the ongoing reality of the resurrection that sets us free from our own sinfulness, that sets us free from the forces of death and the evil one himself. It's ultimately the belief that not only by God's grace are we not defined by our sins, but that we can walk away from them and be made more by the grace of God. And so I want us to pay particular attention to Thomas and the way that he speaks to the Lord, because Thomas isn't necessarily fairly referred to as doubting Thomas. Yes, he doubts. And yes, he sort of talks a big game. But I think it's very important to note that the Gospels do not include him actually touching the nail marks in Jesus' hands or the wound in his side. There's a certain openness that's left there. But what we do hear is the conversation between him and Jesus. Jesus comes right into the worst case scenario that Thomas can imagine. Or perhaps Jesus showing up was the worst case scenario that Thomas didn't even realize he had not considered. Because now he's mocked the idea that Jesus is risen, and then there he is. So not only does he have to carry the weight of having run away from the Lord, but then he also doubted, made light the possibility that he could rise. But there's no finger wagging with Jesus. There's no piling on Thomas, enumerating all of the things that he's done wrong. Instead, there is that simple, come. Put your hand in the nail marks. Touch my side. Do not be unbelieving, but believe. Jesus goes right to Thomas's what ifs to allow him to be made more by his mercy. So the Feast of Divine Mercy is the opportunity to do that. So I want to encourage you that if you're going to make use of the Sacrament of Reconciliation today in particular, but in general, to really have that confidence to face honestly and not excessively, the names of our sins. Sometimes we try and fudge things a little bit and say, well, I've done things that I'm not proud of. I've done stuff that's not appropriate. Say it. Say what you've done. Say the word, say the name. Jesus says, to John in Revelation, I hold the keys of death and the netherworld. It's not just, I hold the keys of the bad stuff. He names it. He's more powerful than all of that. And so our refusal to say what it is that we've done, to name it, is to give shame too much power over us. But we also want to avoid excess. We are sinners like every other sinner. Our sins are not uniquely or extra special bad that we must beat ourselves up, bemoan how awful we are, and go on and on in the confessional. Say the sin. Say how often it's happened. Own it, and then turn it over to the one who holds the keys to death in the netherworld. But then mercy continues to transform us. So as we leave the confessional, as we go through our daily lives, why are we sinning in the ways that we're sinning? So often we sin to try and provide for ourselves, believing that God will not. So why do we lash out in anger? Is there some unhealed wound? Is there some way that we have been wronged through an injustice in the past and we've told ourselves it will never happen again and so I must be on guard? Divine mercy desires to go there. Why do we move in with one we're not married to? Or live out our relationship as if we're married when we're not? Why do we choose to dress less modestly than we should? Let mercy go there, to the place where maybe we believe that no one pays attention to us, that if we don't love like the culture says we should, no one will love us, that we will be left alone. Why do we work ourselves to the bone, skipping the celebration of Holy Mass, time for prayer, even just good, honest recreation with those that we love? Let divine mercy go there, to believe that when Jesus says we're worth more than many sparrows and that he will provide, he means it. When he says, I desire to give you rest, he means it. When he asks us what it profits a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul, he means it. Let divine mercy go to those places, those things that underlie our sins, so that mercy is not just the encounter in the confessional, but the extension of the power of the resurrection to transform us and make us more. Because that's what happens to Thomas. He is made more. Whereas the other apostles are silent, stunned, incredulous for joy when Jesus appears, Thomas professes belief, my Lord and my God. What will God do with us if we allow his divine mercy to touch our hearts? If we have the humility and the courage to say that we're sorry precisely for what we're sorry for, to not be afraid of the what if, but instead to find that in divine mercy there is power even for that, that the keys of death and the netherworld set us free from those chains as well, so that we may live in this life as sons and daughters of God, transformed by that great gift of God's divine mercy.